Good morning. It's 8:06. Welcome to the local news hour. I'm Michelle Dininger, filling in for Leslie Thatcher. On the phone with us from ABC4 is meteorologist Thomas Gaboy with weather for our final weekend of summer. Thomas?
Yeah, good morning, Michelle. And it's definitely the final weekend of summer, and we're going to see some very big changes as we move into next week, as we usher in the fall season, which will begin next Wednesday. But for today and tomorrow, we're not going to really see too many changes compared to what we've seen over the last couple of days. We'll get mostly sunny skies. There'll be a little bit of haze from wildfire smoke, but nothing that's going to be too bad. Looking at moderate air quality for most along the Wasatch front and the Wasatch back. And in Park City today, the daytime high around 76 degrees. So temperatures still remain above average for most spots in Utah. Park City, no exception. Tonight's going to be on the cool and chilly side with overnight lows dropping to 50 degrees. And then tomorrow, nearly a carbon copy of today with a daytime high of 76 degrees before we see temperatures drop into the middle 50s for Friday night under a mostly clear sky. So looking good for any Friday night football for tomorrow night. However, as we move into Saturday, that's when we start to see some changes with our weather. A system's going to be moving in from our southwest, and moisture will start to increase as well. Saturday begins sunny before temperatures top out in the lower to middle 70s, but then during the course of the afternoon, after 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we'll introduce a slight chance for showers and thunderstorms, about a 40% chance from the afternoon into the evening. The rain chance will get a little bit lower during the nighttime hours on Saturday with overnight lows dropping to the lower 50s, but we won't be able to completely eliminate the chance of rain. Then we're looking at a mostly sunny day for our Sunday with a 20% rain chance, and daytime highs, they're gonna ease back into the upper 60s, so a little bit cooler for your Sunday. But then from Sunday night into Monday, a system from the Pacific Northwest is going to bring a cold front along with it. And that's when we're going to see our biggest changes. So Sunday night, we keep a chance for showers as overnight lows drop to around 40 degrees. Then on Monday, we might struggle to reach 50. So it's going to be significantly cooler on Monday, keeping a chance for showers. Before Monday night, we see those temperatures drop potentially into the middle 30s. And if we have a chance for showers around, can't completely eliminate the chance for maybe some high terrain snow, but it doesn't look likely in Park City at this point. Looks like it might just be cold rain if we keep the chance for rain through Monday night, which it looks like there will be a slim chance, mainly before the overnight hours, kind of seeing the rain move out of here as we move into Monday night and Tuesday morning. Then on Tuesday, mostly sunny skies, temperature of 58 degrees for a high. Tuesday night, overnight lows in the upper 30s under a mostly clear sky. Then on Wednesday, as we really begin the fall season, as we begin astronomical fall, the daytime high will be 65 degrees under sunny skies.
Coming up on Local News Hour today, I've got Park City Municipal's Linda Jager, Alex Roy, and Andy Stevenson. They're going to give us details on the city's annual fall open house. That's where they open up the doors and talk about all the projects that the city is working on. After I speak with those three, we'll be talking to Park City Museum Education Director Diane Knispel. She has information about the cemetery tours coming up this weekend at the Glenwood Cemetery. And then after Diane, we'll talk to Park City Film Director Katie Wang with her monthly update on movies and activities related to the Santee. So stay tuned for all of that. A nonprofit in the Heber Valley wants families to come have a free meal and take one to go to start next week. KPCW's Ben Lassiter has details on the annual family-oriented event.
The Caring Community Coalition is observing National Family Meals Month by hosting its annual Family Dinner in the Park Monday. It's a drive-through event this year and will be held at Southfield Park at 415 Southfield Road. It's happening from 5:30 to 7 p.m. There will be 500 hoagie sandwiches available to eat on site, including gluten-free options. In addition, sponsors of the event will have stations for people to drive through. At each one, cars will collect one ingredient to take home and use to make taco soup. The soup's vegetarian friendly. Also at each station, sponsors will relay one educational message about the importance of family and time spent together. Any food left over will go to local food banks. Organizer Trudy Brereton of Wasatch Behavioral Health says the event is all about encouraging families to enjoy meals together.
It creates family bonds. It opens up family communication. Kids who eat meals with their families do better in school, have better grades, are less likely to participate in high-risk behaviors like alcohol and drug use. It helps with obesity prevention because they tend to eat healthier meals if they sit down and eat together, eat a home-cooked meal. So that's our purpose for doing it.
The Caring Community Coalition brings local government, service groups, schools, and community members together. Its mission is to identify and target ways to improve well-being in Wasatch County.
We are a community coalition that represents all different sectors of our community, and we are a data-driven coalition. We review data and look at where the problem areas are, and then we work to address those problems. It's also a network, like a sharing coalition, where people can talk about their events they have going on or problems that they're seeing in the community.
One of the sponsors is the Wasatch Latino Coalition, which told KPCW it's looking for a couple more volunteers for its booth. For more information on the event, the Caring Community Coalition, or how to volunteer at the Wasatch Latino Coalition booth, visit kpcw.org. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
In the studio with me is Park City Municipal's Linda Jaeger and Alex Roy. Park City Municipal is hosting its fall open house next Wednesday from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the Park City Library. Joining to talk all about it, Linda, Alex, and by phone, Andy. Is Andy going to make it by phone?
He should be tied in.
All right. We will look to connect him as well, and then we'll have the three of you. Good morning. Thanks for joining.
Good morning, Michelle.
City open houses are held twice a year, once in the spring, once in the fall. Specific departments and projects for this next one will include special events, transportation, building, police, recreation, and others. Linda, let's start with you.
Sure.
What are some of the project highlights you're going to be talking about?
Well, actually, for the first time as the community engagement team, we organized these events. So we're in our sixth year of doing these biannual open houses.
And we thought, you know, let's take our opportunity to have our guests look at ways that they can stay in touch with the city. So we're going to showcase all the different ways that you can stay on top of city news and events and sign up for text alerts and newsletters. And so we're really excited to share that with our guests. And then a couple other departments that are participating with their projects. Our building team will be there to talk about some processes that they've implemented that streamline inspection and permitting processes and make them much easier. Our Trails and Open Space team will be providing updates on the wildfire mitigation work they're doing on Treasure Hill. They're going to introduce our two new trail rangers. What a really cool job they have.
Nice.
And also talk about the fantastic Transit to Trails program, which has been extended through October. Mike McComb, our emergency manager, will be at the event. And it's actually Emergency Preparedness Month,
Preparedness
in September. And so Mike will be sharing all sorts of opportunities for and information about emergency prep and then also signing up for our emergency alerts. And our police team will be there to talk about some crime prevention tips, career opportunities, and then also their Explorers program, which is a great program for young adults age 14 through 20 who are interested in learning about law enforcement careers. And it's been really successful.
Wow, that's a lot. That sounds like something that's
going
to...
And that's only a few.
That sounds like it would get a big turnout for sure.
You know,
yes. Territory.
Yeah, you know, we usually get about 100 or so folks that have been coming to these events. We did have a year of pause with COVID, but we came back in the spring with an outdoor event, and it was wildly successful. I think it was our biggest turnout ever, and, you know, we'll be outside again this year. We are encouraging folks to bring masks, and we'll have some available. But it's forecast to be a beautiful fall afternoon, so my fingers are crossed that it will remain that way. And we are going to have food and beverage from Lucky Ones, who actually is also a recipient of one of our economic development grants, so that's another program we can talk about. Our rec trailer will be there with some lawn games for folks, and it's just a great opportunity to connect and come and find out more about what the city's been doing and learn more.
All right. Alex, working in transportation, what would you want the public to know about transportation in Park City?
Well, the open house will have three ongoing planning projects that will be available for the public to review. We've had the long-range transportation master plan, also called Park City Forward, that's been going on since about 2019. And we're getting close to wrapping that up, so we're going to be presenting some of the stages of the work that's been done to date, some of the evaluation we've done, and some of the initial findings of that program. We've also kicked off two new programs. The short-range transit plan that you could picture is like a five-year capital investment program for transit specifically that's going to be looking at connecting routes to locations to key destinations of specifically transit within Park City boundaries. That, you know, gets really into like how many buses we have, what can these buses do, where can routes be served. So it's very tactile in its operations. That just kicked off this fall, so we'll have information on that and probably a survey also for that program. We also have the active transportation plan that we'll be looking at improving walking and biking in the community. That builds off previous work with the Trails Master Plan and then the Walk Bond from a few years ago, really looking at the next 10 to 15 years of active transportation in the city. So we'll have all three of those programs. We'll have staff there manning each one of those information booths, and we'll also have some consultants there as well providing information.
That's a lot of change coming in the near future.
I think, you know, like many programs, we kind of took a little bit of a pause not knowing what COVID would bring, and I think we've really heard from the community, you know, ramping up, start looking at different transportation modes and models that could best serve the community.
Let's take a quick second and say good morning to Andy. Andy, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me all right?
Yep, I can hear you just fine. Welcome. Okay, so would either of you want to talk? Okay, so that was very near 10 years. Do you want to talk about 20 years from now, or is that too far in the distance?
So I'd say the long-range transportation plan is looking at 20 to 30 years on many of these projects. So it's a high-level look at transportation and innovations that could be coming. So I'd say in the 10 to 30-year range, many of those projects are looking.
Okay. So what would you say is the biggest obstacle standing in the way of solving the city's transportation issues?
That's a good question. I don't think there's one single big obstacle. I think we're working hard to create a vision of what transportation should be in the community. We hear a lot of different programs like, well, you know, basically reduce congestion is one of the major things we hear about. So I think understanding where that congestion comes from, what is the cause of that congestion, and then like what also periods of time that congestion exists is probably one of the biggest issues. You know, we've seen it a lot in these resort communities like Little Cottonwood and ourselves that really have an interesting travel pattern that's a little bit different than what's typically considered a travel pattern, you know, the 9-to-5 workday. But we see these big events, ski days, you know, powder days, and that they really are major transportation generators or trip generators. And I think really understanding the nuance of where these people are coming from and when these issues are happening is probably the biggest question we're looking to solve.
Yeah, so that's the $1 million question, or maybe it's the $1 billion question now. I think everybody wants to know, where is the congestion coming from? Aside from ski related traffic, which is easily identifiable, the rest of it seems like it's just sheer volumes of people moving to town, or is it more complicated than that?
I think it's a little more complicated than that. I mean, I certainly think a lot of people are moving to town, but some of the survey data we've seen from the U.S. Census shows about 7,000 people coming into town per day for their daily commute. Now, that doesn't take into account, you know, seasonal jobs, people who are working in construction, or recreation users. So, but we only see about 2,000 people staying in town. So we're getting, you know, a magnitude of more people coming into town than are actually just moving around town, which is unique for Park City, I think, being, you know, it's kind of the destination of Summit County. So I think we're really trying to understand those travel patterns of where people are coming from and how they're getting here and how we can best get those people before they enter the town.
Yep, that makes sense. I think that you've been looking at that 7,000 people coming into town to work for quite some time, and that's pretty intractable because it's related to people not finding places to live closer to where they work, which probably most people would do if they could, right?
I would imagine so. I mean, there's a lot of factors of where people choose to live, you know, proximity to other family members, other people's jobs, other, you know, spouse jobs as well. So I think it's, you know, a big ball that we're trying to unpack here.
True. Andy, since you're heading up the short-range transit plan and looking at all of the changes that have occurred in the last 18 months and everything we're still in with the pandemic, you want to talk about how the city's bus service rebounded after the COVID slump?
Yeah, so the transit department is working really closely with Alex's team. They're heading the short-range transit planning process, but really this is kind of a next step after all of the hard work that the county and Park City have done to get that kind of transit separation implemented. This is kind of the next step for Park City, is now we can look at our transit routes and really examine how do we best connect all of these major destinations with easy to use transit service. So, and as far as COVID recovery goes, you know, transit as a whole throughout the nation is kind of sitting back and thinking about how do we regain ridership and how do we best implement services that will attract riders. And so a lot of them are looking at, yeah, they're reimagining their system routes and their services to, you know, try to regain those riders and make a service that's really easy to use for lots of people. And so that's a great opportunity with this short range transit plan, is we can look at all of that, get feedback from the community with COVID in mind, and see how we can move forward with routes that serve lots of people and connect major destinations with easy to use transit service.
Mm-hmm. And you just announced the fall transit schedule. Any major changes to highlight?
Yeah, so we just previously moved into kind of our off-season fall schedule. This time around, we only put the 4 Orange service on hold for the off-season, and then that will resume kind of in mid-November when we ramp up our major winter routes and services.
All right, that sounds good. How does the winter look? Anything later in the season to keep on our radar?
Yeah, I would just say look out for those, that winter service change in mid-November. And yeah, then, of course, we, during Sundance, we have different routes and shuttles that we work with the film festival on. But yeah, the major service changes would just be look out for added service in mid-November.
So with Sundance being perhaps, I'm guessing, I don't want to use the word up in the air, but I bet they have a few contingency plans. And so you're going to have contingency plans perhaps based on their contingency plans, right?
Yeah, and I'm not directly involved with the conversations with Sundance, but yeah, we are working closely with them as always and just kind of looking at, yeah, this, it's not a regular Sundance here as much as we kind of all had hoped COVID would be in the past by now. You know, we're so, kind of everything we've learned in the last year is that we just have to have those contingency plans and think about the impacts of COVID and what that might look like on transit service.
Yep. That's all we can do at this point, I think.
Yeah.
Linda. Thanks, Andy. Linda, what other projects do you want to talk about while you're here coming up next week?
Oh, well, actually next week we'll be having our council retreat on Tuesday, and the open house will fall on Wednesday, so we can share some updates there. And then we also have a council meeting on Thursday, so it's a busy week for council. We have coming up in October, another way to stay in touch, on the 6th, we'll have our Coffee with Council. This one will be virtual. It will be hosted by the mayor, Andy Bierman, and council member Steve Joyce. Those have been a really popular way to stay in touch. We're actually having that as an evening edition from 7 to 8, so coffee is not required. You can choose a beverage of your choice at
beverage
from your
of
home,
choice
from your home. So we're just continuing to keep these opportunities available for the public to connect with the city, and we really appreciate the increased participation in our events, especially virtually. They've been extremely popular.
Yeah, that just adds so much flexibility for people who can't get there in person or prefer not to be in person. It's nice to have that as an option.
Yes, indeed.
Alex, is there anything else you want to highlight?
That's coming to immediately. Just imagine that there's going to be a number of public outreach events for both the short-range transit plan and the active transportation plan. So keep your eyes open for, you know, Facebook updates or social media or the newsletters, and we'll be advertising any sort of surveys or online engagement via those platforms.
All right, that sounds good. Thank you all for your time this morning. Appreciate it. Take care. Talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Sounds great. Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye. We just talked to Linda Jager, Andy Stevenson, and Andy Roy and Alex Stevenson from Park City Municipal, discussing next week's open house. Anybody who wants to go to that, it's from 5 to 6:30 next Wednesday at the Park City Library on the patio. Now joining us in studio, we have Diane Knispel from the Park City Museum. She has some details about a fall event that is so appropriate to the season, the cemetery tour. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So the cemetery tours are returning after being held virtually online last year. I didn't participate in that. That's hard to imagine. How did that go?
It was different last year. We did it just to give
people something to see and something to do. So we just wanted people to remember the cemetery. So that's why we did it virtually last year. And this year we're so happy to have it back in person.
Oh, I'll bet. So this year's event will be dedicated to the late Park City Planning Director and President and Committee Chair of the Glenwood Cemetery, Bruce Erickson. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Bruce was instrumental in keeping the cemetery clean and making sure that things were done over there. We do annual cleanups. We make sure that the cemetery is being taken care of. And Bruce was our leader for a long time, so we really missed him. And one of the things he really wanted us to do was the fraternal organizations, because they were so important to why Glenwood was set up in the first place. And so we decided to do the fraternal organizations this year in memory of him. So we are glad to do that and focus on how the founders really kept things going. And so the theme this year is Founders of Glenwood, Park City's Fraternal Orders, and how they helped in times of need. And we will go into that, and we will go into how they were social organizations as well for the miners who were here originally. And so it should be a lot of fun.
So for people who have been here not as long as others, talk about why Glenwood Cemetery is so special to Park City.
It's really our history. We have a lot of people who are buried there that were mining families that started in Park City. So as everyone probably knows, mining is not an easy job, and a lot of the miners got sick with miners' con. Some of the miners had accidents in the mines and things like that, and they were trying to find a burial place for the miners that were here originally, because Park City was a silver mining town for many decades, and so it was a place that they could go and they could have their burials done. The fraternal organizations offered some insurance for all the miners as one of their things that they offered their people. So it was really a way of making sure that they had that insurance so that if something happened to them, their families were taken care of.
Mm-hmm. So who are some of the historical figures who maybe loom large in Park City lore who will be represented in the cemetery tour?
This year we are going to be talking about Roy Fletcher from the Fletcher family in town. People may not have remembered Roy as much as they've remembered Mel, because Mel was his son and involved in the skiing. But Roy was a painter, and he worked at the Egyptian Theater for years. So did his wife Blanche. And so that's one of the families we're going to be talking about. We have Ansel Johnson, who was a police officer, a cowboy, a cattle herder, and many other jobs. We have William Gidley, who was the sexton and the superintendent of the original superintendent of the Glenwood Cemetery. And we have Lavinia Jensen, who was married and had 7 kids. John Shields, and so we're doing about 7 characters this year, so we are excited to bring their stories to life.
That's great. It takes a special dedication to honor those people by portraying them in an event like this. Who is taking on those roles?
Sure. So we've got Hunt Williams and Steve Leonard and Jennifer Easter and Linda Humbert and Melanie Webb. Linda will be doing the morning version of Molly, and Melanie will be doing the afternoon. Karen Keating, Anthony Greenhall, and Lanny Scopes. And so those are our actors this year.
So they are professionally trained. I wondered if they were historians first and actors second, or maybe the other way around.
Actually, most of them are just volunteers. Lanny is the only one who does acting as part of his job, but everyone else is really a volunteer and are just happy to portray someone else for a day and let you know about their histories. So we're excited to have them.
And then where do they get their period costumes? Do they come from the museum, or would that probably not be Actually, good for preserving the clothing.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of funny. One of our board members has a costume collection. So we just call him and say, can we come over and borrow some of your costumes? And Ron is really good about that. So we have a place to go where we can find costumes and dress everybody up. So, yeah.
Ron's costume closet sounds like it would be popular at Halloween, or is it just all history?
It's a little bit of everything. He's really good at collecting different outfits, and we can put things together to make up an outfit, which is fabulous. So people really enjoy doing that too, going over and looking at what he has and trying to represent their character as much as possible.
Oh, I'll bet. All right, so how many people can join on the tours? You're limiting numbers.
Yes, we have 105 in the morning and 105 in the afternoon. Our morning tour is sold out, but our afternoon tour is still available. We still, as of last night, had about 40 tickets left. You can go on our website and get the tickets. And if you have any concerns or problems or questions, just contact me at the museum. Again, my name's Diane, and I'm responsible for it. So be happy to help you.
All right, so 40 more slots available for the afternoon. A little bit more about the cemetery. So how many people are interred there?
There's over 900 people, and there are, what surprises a lot of people is that there are a lot of children buried there. And the reason why is because you got to remember the medicine, the technology was not like it is today, where they can save people, and so. So there's over 900, a lot of children, a lot of babies, a lot of people. So, yeah.
You're in the process of restoring some of the headstones, I understand. What is that process like? I would imagine that would be very delicate work.
Yes, it is. We've had a company come in. That's what they do. They restore headstones. So they come in and they restore the headstones. They look at each and every one in a particular section, because they usually work section by section. And anything that needs to be looked at and restored so that they're not toppling, so that they're not falling apart, they will look at that and they will analyze what they have to do with it, and then they will very carefully go in and make sure that headstone is going to be preserved for forever. That's what their goal is, to make sure that the headstones are there for as long as we can do.
How long does that work take? I suppose it varies.
It varies. They usually come for a month during the summertime. They were here in, I think they were here July and August this year. And they spend a good amount of time going through and looking at each of the headstones and then coming up with a plan as to what they're going to do. I don't know if they're coming back next summer, but we've had them for the last two summers mm-hmm. do the preservation work. And they've done a fine job. I mean, it looks beautiful, really, with the work that they've done.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. All right. Again, these tours are a fundraiser for the cemetery. Tickets are $15.
Yes.
And you're advising that people under 10 years old would perhaps be too young. Is that because of what you were just mentioning previously about the number of children in the cemetery, or other reasons?
I think some of the stories are very harsh. These people had really difficult lives, and I think sometimes people don't realize how difficult their lives were, and we just don't want the younger kids to have nightmares or anything like that. So we want to caution the parents ahead of time that it may not be for every child. The stories can be very, very difficult, the way people died, the way they lived, too. So that's why we do it that way.
Understood. All right, thank you. People who want to get one of the last 40 tickets for the afternoon tour can go to parkcityhistory.org. And you're asking that people don't bring their dogs?
Correct.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Is there any other aspect of the cemetery tour that you want to talk about right now?
It is a fundraiser, so we can continue to preserve the cemetery, so we can preserve the headstones. Donations are always welcome, too. If you can't come and you'd like to make a donation to the cemetery, please feel free.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nice to see you.
We appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Summit County Health Director Phil Bondurant says that the county's COVID-19 numbers are showing some modest improvements compared to the rest of the state. But he says the county is not out of the woods yet. Rick Bruff has more.
In his regular report to the County Board of Health on Monday, Bondurant said that case counts for Utah showed an increase at the end of August and early September. Summit County showed a decline, he said, reporting 9.5 to 10 cases per day in the early part of the month. But Bondurant said they're waiting with bated breath for any impacts from the Miners' Day weekend. The county's level for 14-day active positive cases per 100,000 people came to nearly 380 cases in mid-August. Summit's 14-day positivity rate now is 330 per 100,000 people. Within Summit, the eastern county shows 450 cases for every 100,000 residents as compared to a 14-day rate of 285 in the western county. In August, the county was reclassified from a moderate to high transmission status. Bondurant said one reason for that was a state metric.
And that is a statewide number for ICU utilization and total hospital utilization that, generally speaking, is not something that we can influence in Summit County. That's a statewide metric that's used. And as we learned 3 to 4 weeks ago, the state ICU concerns and the number of hospitalizations increasing at the rate it has, that ticked us up to the high level of transmission for moderate.
The state has reported that over 91% of all its ICU beds are occupied. Dr. Wayne Provence reported that the Intermountain Healthcare System expected to hit 150% this week. Meanwhile, IHC recently announced it will be postponing many non-urgent surgeries for several weeks. The doctor also noted that several studies are saying it's time to look at additional booster shots. He said the county has seen growth in breakthrough cases, patients who have been vaccinated but still caught the virus.
The immunity from the vaccine lasts about 8 months after you've been vaccinated. Natural immunity, if you were to get the disease without being vaccinated, your immunity lasts for almost 3 months, a little more than 2 months, but about 3 months is a good number. So the vaccine lasts about 8 months. And now we're seeing folks who were vaccinated about 8 or 9 months ago who are having breakthrough cases. But again, those are the folks whose immune systems are already weakened due to their own medical conditions or ages.
Dr. Provence said he's working with the county health department to have booster shots available within the month. Phil Bondurant said the county's also looking forward to getting a vaccine for children 5 to 12. He told KBCW that once a vaccine gets an FDA approval on an emergency basis and is okayed by the Utah Department of Health, they can start giving the shots. Some of the best news for Summit County is that its vaccination rates are among the highest in the country. At least one dose of the vaccine has been given to 93% of eligible residents. A complete series of shots has been given to 82% of those eligible. But Bondurant said it's no time to be complacent.
To say that we are out of the woods and that we can rely only on the vaccination numbers, I think is a bit of a fallacy at this point. It's too early to tell, and it's too early to make a prediction as to what is to come when the weather turns and we begin to move inside and things change. But it does provide hope that those that are vaccinated, the 82% that are vaccinated, that are eligible, tend to fare better than those that are not, which is why our focus lies in those that ineligible population for vaccination.
Summit County Health Director Phil Bondurant. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Park City Institute has announced its lineup for the season. It has got music, dance, photographers, and other acts coming to the Eccles main stage starting in early October. KPCW's Ben Lassiter has more on those events and how you can interact with the artists and the speakers.
At its season reveal event at the O.P. Rockwell Hall Tuesday, Park City Institute President Ari Ioannidis announced a range of acts coming to the Eccles Center main stage. They'll include 4 music and 2 dance performances and 5 speakers, which include comedians, authors, and a space photographer, among others. They kick off October 9th with Amy Vital, a National Geographic wildlife photographer known for following the last white rhino. Ioannidis said another highlight will be comedy group Second City from Chicago performing sketch and improv sets. The first musical group will be Danny Serafine and CTA in November. Others to come later in the year include So Percussion and Grupo Fantasma for a Latin-themed event where everything will be in Spanish. At the reveal event, Ioannidis told the audience the calendar was especially meaningful after an off year due to the pandemic. This year, he said planners are following guidelines for event safety as they're updated and the auditorium is spacious enough for people to spread out. He also said the Park City Institute's looking to coordinate student engagement between about half of the performers and Park City schools.
Danny Serafin has offered to do, there's a video out there of him playing with a percussion group and about 30 students, which is just super exciting. He's offered to send the music and do that. So Percussion, they do something called Beyond, Above the Noise, which is just a great piece, and that'll get the students on stage. Second City has offered to do, for the drama class, improv session. We also have offers from Terry Virts is going to do a dedicated show for the students where he, you know, they'll get to really meet an astronaut, which is exciting.
He clarified that the classroom engagement efforts are still unofficial, largely because they'd require teachers to rearrange schedules.
What we've done for the first time this year is provide the school district with a comprehensive report. It's hard for them to take advantage of every opportunity. Teachers are busy, schedules are tight.
For more information and a link to the Main Stage events calendar and tickets, visit kpcw.org. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
Park City Film has a September packed with screenings. Joining now with a monthly update is Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning. Good to be here.
How are you?
I'm doing well, looking at some beautiful blue skies, which is always a good thing when you're running a drive-in. So hold off the rain. August was a little tough for us.
Right? I was thinking about that. It's going to get cold, but drive-ins are places where you can bundle up with your blankets and your fleece.
Yes, and cuddle up with your neighbors because, you know, it is a drive-in after all. So
exactly. So how have the drive-ins been going? How are your numbers compared to last year? Has it been popular?
You know, we were a little nervous going into it. We knew people loved it last year. We had over 10,000 people join us, and so we were kind of keeping our fingers crossed because we knew things were starting to open up, and now we had competition. Would people still come? But as it turns out, people still love the drive-in. We had a little bit of a challenging August with evacuations and fires and smoke and rain, and so we've had to reschedule just a couple. Mother Nature was not on our side this year, so we rescheduled a couple of screenings, and actually two screenings coming up are rescheduled from ones that we had to postpone in August. So the weather this month, fingers crossed, we have 3 weekends to go. So we're hoping for blue skies and no rain. Cold is not a problem. It's the rain that becomes a little challenging.
Oh, for sure. Which ones are rescheduled?
So tonight at 7 o'clock, we have The Princess Bride that was rescheduled from an August screening because it was just torrential rain. It was actually kind of funny. I was taking pictures of how hard it was raining that night when we were supposed to be showing the film. And it, for that particular film, we had offered that our first responders, firefighters, you know, all the folks, that emergency personnel that kept us safe during the Parley's Canyon fire. I live in Pine Brook, so very close to my heart here.
So do I.
Oh, good. Same neighbors. We had offered free tickets for all of them using the code PCHERO, all caps. And we're extending that offer, of course, for this screening tonight. So if you haven't bought a ticket and you are one of those heroes in our community, we would love to have you join us tonight at 7 o'clock. And if you don't know anything about this film, it is probably the greatest and funniest fairy tale of all time. Engaging, you know, good for all ages, an amazing cast of characters. So that'll be tonight at 7 at the Twilight Drive-In.
That would be fun to watch that on the big screen. My family watches that almost every New Year's Eve, family tradition.
Oh, nice. Great. Yes. Eminently quotable. Robin Wright, Manny Potemkin, Sean Wallace. Just, yeah, very clever and great for adults and kids. So that's definitely one of those ones. We try to program, since I have kids myself, films that I want to see with my kids. And then we'll enjoy, you know, kind of adult, you know, the intellectual theme in there definitely is appealing for sure.
Yes. And then everybody can refresh all of their quotes that they want to use from it.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
What's your favorite, Katie? What's your favorite Princess Bride quote?
Well, my husband and I always say, have fun storming the castle when we go off. So,
you know what? There are so many to choose from. One of the ones that we heavy rotation at our house is, I do not think that word means what you think it means.
Yes. Yes, very clever writing in that one. But we have some great other films. The other one that we had to reschedule was In the Heights, and we're actually going to show it for Hispanic Heritage Month, which started yesterday on September 15th. And so that'll be on September 24th now at 8 p.m., which is next Friday. And this is based on Lin-Manuel Miranda's award-winning Broadway musical. And it's a story set in the Dominican neighborhood of Washington Heights, New York, my hometown. And this is a film about family and community and not being afraid to be who you are and be proud of your your heritage and follow your dreams. So Anthony Ramos, Corey Hawkins, we're both from Hamilton. Melissa Barrera, just fantastic musical, kind of old school. If you loved West Side Story and Singing in the Rain and those kind of big productions, this definitely lives up to that history. But that'll be on next Friday on September 24th at 8 p.m. And then we're closing everything out at the Twilight Drive-In with a series of ski films because, you know, we're a ski town and the weather's getting colder, so we're starting to think about snow. So we've got three different nights, September 25th, which is a Saturday. We're bringing the film Buried, which is a documentary about the 1982 Alpine Meadows avalanche. Mm-hmm. And we'll have the Q&A after the film with the director, Stephen Sigg. Chad Breckelsberg from the Utah Avalanche Central will join us, and the Alpine Assassins, which is such a great name, which is a backcountry snowmobile group, will be joining us to talk about safety in the backcountry here, which is, of course, very important. October 1st, which is the next weekend, we have the Free Ski Film Tour with films from Level One, Armada, Good Company, Tom Wallace, a local skier here who's well-known, will also be in there. And then on October 2nd, which will be our last film for the drive-in for this season, Matchstick Productions, The Stomping Grounds, which is their new ski film for the season, will have premiere. Yeah, it's kind of a fun way to kick off the season. And then, of course, the classic, we love our classics, Aspen Extreme will follow that. So we'll have tickets priced for each night, even though there's multiple films each night. It'll just be that $130 per car ticket price. Mm-hmm. You can also get a package deal for $80 that'll cover all three nights, and you'll get a free ski tune in there and lots of swag. We have a limited number of those available, so if you know you're going to go to all three nights, grab those tickets now at parkcityfilm.org. But just really excited. The drive-in's been amazing again this year, and just can't thank enough people for coming out. Made in Park City and Switchback Sports, our sponsors, and of course Dragonfly Media Technologies, our partners, and UOP, our host, for making all that possible.
So would you say that the Twilight series is here to stay?
We're definitely looking at next year. It's kind of a work in progress. As I said, now we have more competition. We're opening back up at the Santee. This will be our second weekend this weekend. So we'll have a little bit of overlap, and we're kind of navigating that. We are a fairly small organization. We're definitely looking towards next summer. June was fantastic. And just kind of programming around, times when we think June was great because not much is going on. People are getting out of school. The weather's really good. Outdoor events are always a challenge. But yeah, we're certainly looking at this for the long term just based on the responses. As long as people keep coming, we'll keep showing movies. So if you like it, vote with your feet. Come on out, or your car, I guess, and come out to the drive-in.
So there's plenty of room. You haven't run out of room for accommodating people yet, have you? In terms of the cars?
No, we have 120 cars. Yep, we have 120 cars, and that allows us to park cars in every other spot. So with COVID restrictions, you have your spot for your car, and then the spot next to you, you can sit in if you like. That gives you a 9-foot distance between unrelated parties. And it turns out that that's just a great way to sit anyway, even in a non-COVID environment, just to have that extra space to spread out. It's a huge parking lot, a nice slope there with the screen. So, sometimes, we definitely sell out shows, but that's a good size. And I think it's larger than most drive-ins. Most drive-ins are about, 25, 30 cars. So we're larger than most, and so have plenty of space for folks. And, it's priced per car, so you can bring your whole family. We've had groups as large as 12 show up in their Sprinter vans or minivans. And yep, exactly. Bring some seats, sit outside. So yeah, no, I think it's a good size for us. And I don't think we'd be looking to expand that at all.
Yeah, that does sound significantly roomy for everybody. So can you compare attendance between your in-person screenings, virtual, and the Twilight? Do you track that?
We do, absolutely. I would say Twilight, certainly last year, that blew the doors off. We had no, 10,000 people. It was beyond our expectations going into it. So we were really pleased with that. Virtual cinema has been great. Engagement has not been high. That's, true for us as well as other theaters across the country. It's not the same as in person. Mm-hmm. You have competition from whatever your subscription is, Netflix, HBO Max, all those kind of things. We do bring in films in our virtual cinema that typically are not available on other platforms. This week, we're bringing in a Sundance 2021 Film Festival premiere about the visionary Black choreographer Alvin Ailey, which is amazing. If you are a fan of dance at all, mm-hmm. Or if you don't know anything about Alvin Ailey, this would be a great introduction to his work. Just beautiful film. And, a lot of folks are still interested in staying at home and also just having a supplement. You know, you have perhaps all these subscriptions, but maybe the algorithm that feeds you these films, maybe your kids have been watching your Netflix account and suddenly you're getting all these cartoons. you know, we're really looking at what would resonate with our community. What's going to be something that would speak to the people that live here, to the people that, you know, appreciate the art of cinema. And so really having someone kind of guide you through that just endless list of films that are online is something that, we're particularly proud of and people are responding to. But it's not the same as an in-theater experience. I mean, that certainly is, you know, that's where you see more people. And, you know, honestly, we're excited to be back in the theater because that theatrical experience of just being around other people, hearing people respond, laugh, cry. You know, I was in the Telluride Film Festival and there was one film that we're excited to bring in about Alex Lowe. People were weeping. I mean, you could hear people sobbing in the theater and it's just that response of you're like, it's not just me tearing up. Like, it's other people too. It just gives you the license to, you know, it's like, it's okay. We're all feeling the same thing and it just, it kind of wraps itself around you. It's just, I mean, there's nothing, I mean, obviously I'm a big fan of all of this, but you know, there's nothing like it. And to be back in the theater and you get the same at the drive-in. So that's what's been such a pleasure about that, of just hearing people that, you know, the laughter echoing through the canyon is just, you know, it reminds me of why I do what I do, but just how important it is that this form of the arts, you know, is retained and supported and does not go away.
So that reminds me of something that I'm going to take this opportunity to ask you about. In addition to the camaraderie of the live film experience, there's the technical aspect of watching something that is just better taken in on a larger screen, which is what everyone has said about the movie Summer of Soul. I've been told by every single person I know who's seen it that I may not watch it at home. I have to wait until I see it on the big screen. And so I didn't get to see it yet. I want to see it so badly. And I keep looking at my TV thinking, isn't that big enough to watch this movie?
It's now, and we showed that last weekend, and it was, I've seen it now three times, at the drive-in, at the festival, and then, you know, in our theater. And there's just something about that surround sound. I mean, I honestly, the first time we did a sound check after being closed, you know, for COVID, you forget, you hear a sound behind you, and you kind of jump out of your seat. You're like, what is that? Is someone behind me in the theater? Because you're by yourself doing a sound check, and you're like, oh, no, it's surround sound. You just forget that the audio in your home, even if you have these beautiful theaters, and I know people have those, there's something about the space that you're in, the size of it, the size of the screen. Mm-hmm. You know, some people like to sit right up close to the screen and just, you just can't, you're just complete, 100% of your attention is that. There's no texting, there's no kettle whistling in the background, dog barking, you know, you are just in that moment for 90 minutes. And for something like Summer of Soul, and we have the Anthony Bourdain documentary coming up this weekend.
Oh,
it just, it deserves 100% of your attention and you absorb it in a completely different way. I mean, you have to, even for someone like myself, this is my job. I have to remind myself when I'm at home, like, okay, just stop being distracted.
All right. So what I'm hearing from you is that I may not watch Summer of Soul at home. I'm hearing it from the pro at the top. Okay. I won't do it.
Yes.
Wait.
Yep. Yep. Wait to see it in the theater. But yeah, it's okay. Yeah, we've got lots of films coming up in the theater that, and we've specifically, I mean, as we do with the virtual cinema and certainly with the drive-in, you know, really look at what are those films that are going to bring people back into theaters.
Yep.
You know, we've created what we you know, believe to be a safe environment. You know, we're requiring masks in our theater at all times, unless you're sitting in your seat eating or drinking. It's 50% capacity. We've had a great response from folks, of course, enhanced ventilation and all of that. But we really have brought in some films coming up that we, you know, that really kind of deserve to be seen on the big screen, and I think will be a completely different experience and much more enjoyable. So Summer of Soul last weekend was fantastic. This weekend, Roadrunner, which is about Anthony Bourdain, by esteemed documentarian Morgan Neville. And really, it doesn't do his whole spectrum of his life, but it really focuses on how he went from this unknown chef to becoming this well-known TV personality and just the joy that he brought to all of us through his adventures and just, you know, wanting to be a traveler, not a tourist, and just the struggles that he faced, you know, unfortunately, you know, taking his own life a couple of years ago, but just as a beautiful tribute to an amazing person. 9 days is the film after that, which was at the 2020 Film
Katie,
Festival.
I'm sorry, I want to listen to this, but I've got to leave it there. But thanks so much for all of that. It was great to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, talk to you next time. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Morning Edition and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City and Heber Valley Hospitals, part of Intermountain Healthcare, and the Red Ledges Community.